Hi, I'm Michael Servers and you're listening to Radioactive.
Ihr kennt ihn vielleicht als September aus Fringe, Professor Pig aus Gotham oder aus Broadway-Musicals wie Tommy, Fun Home und Sweeney Todd. Der amerikanische Schauspieler Michael Servers war exklusiv bei uns zu Gast. Charlotte und Patrick hatten die Chance, dem zweifachen Tony Award-Gewinner Fragen zu stellen.
Als erstes haben wir uns gefragt, ob es für ihn Vor- und Nachteile gibt, wenn er vor der Kamera oder auf der Bühne steht. Und hat Michael eine Vorliebe?
Each one of them presents different challenges, and I kind of enjoy and appreciate and get frustrated by the challenges in equal measure. I don't really feel like there's a profound difference in acting for screen and for stage. I feel like fundamentally you're doing the same job, which is to tell a story in as credible a way as possible. The technical requirements of each one change, but then that's true job to job. You know, the technical requirements of one play will be different from those requirements in another play, and the requirements in one television series will be different from the requirements in another series. I really have enjoyed, though, and maybe because I did so much theater for so long, when you are working on screen, you're supposed to be standing, on top of a building. It's nice to not have to pretend that you're standing on top of a building. You're actually standing on top of a building. So at least part of your work is done for you that way. I also, just in practical terms, I enjoy the fact that if you have to go someplace to film on location, you get to go see that place and experience a different culture or a different town or different people. So I enjoy those aspects of working on screen. At some level, I'll always be a stage creature. You know, that's where my work began, and I keep circling back to it, and I will never leave it completely. And I think part of that is because the experience you have on stage, what you are creating is being received in that moment by other human beings in the same space. There's something beautiful about a thing that only exists in that one moment. That performance is only happening that night with those people in that room. But there's also something really great being able to have something documented that people can watch whenever and return to and still enjoy. So I don't really prefer one or the other. I prefer to be able to do both.
Wie bereitet sich auf eine Rolle vor?
Improvising has always sort of terrified me. I like having a structure and a framework and then use that to see how new and spontaneous and inventive you can be inside that framework. If I have no framework, I'm paralyzed by the possibilities that way.
Nach so viel Bühnenerfahrung gibt es natürlich jede Menge Erinnerungen an Publikumsreaktionen. Welche war die einprägsamste?
When we did Tommy initially in La Jolla, California, when we were first putting that musical together that's based on the album by The Who, it was so complicated technically, and we had been in rehearsals, and we actually canceled our first performance a couple of days because we weren't ready yet. And by the time we finally performed it in front of an audience, I'm not sure we had gotten quite through the whole show yet. I mean, we must have technically done it, but I'm not sure we like ran it without an audience. So I think the first time we really went through the whole thing might have been in front of an audience. And we almost sort of didn't think about the audience until we got to Listening to You, which is the big anthem at the end. And the audience leapt to their feet as one group, almost like some electric current had been sent through the seats to make them jump up. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And it was really thrilling in that moment to sort of watch the audience have that connection with the story and with the music at the same time.
Michael hat in Yale studiert. Wie hat das Studierendenleben seinen Weg beeinflusst?
Yale, at the time that I went there, so much of the theater that happened on campus was student organized and student run and performed in a dining hall or in, you know, the basement of a dormitory or something. And some of the most creative and inventive work was done with tiny little budgets and a bunch of students who just wanted to get together and do this play and tell this story or create something brand new from nothing. Some of what that gave me was a And understanding that you can do it yourself. You don't have to just wait for people to give you permission to do things. And you can create something yourself, and you can get together with your friends and just do something. And you also are going to develop skills that are really going to serve you well when you go out into the world after university. I think another thing I learned was not to compare my progress to anybody else's. And because there will be people who immediately have opportunities and get to do things, and you'll start to think, oh, well, if it happened for them and it's not happened for me yet, then I guess maybe it's not for me. And it just happens for different people at different speeds all the time. There are so many people whose real success and creativity doesn't kick in until decades after they've left university.
Was für ein Rat würde er Studierenden mitgeben?
I've never been someone who is really focused on an end result. Like, I mostly just wanted to do things that were interesting to me and that were challenging to me and that were different from what I had done before. If I was always looking at the goal of being on Broadway, say, I would always be looking at how far I was from that goal all the time and being frustrated by it and being discontented most of the time. Whereas if my goal is just to do something challenging, do something interesting, be better next week than I am this week and know more tomorrow than I know today, that I have some control over, and I can accomplish that, and I can achieve those little goals along the way. Eventually, over time, they will lead you someplace, and probably more often to someplace that's going to be interesting and satisfying and sustaining, because you're not waking up every day being disappointed about your life. And instead, you're just, you know, you're actively doing something that you care about. And that's, you know, that's a prize in my book.
Eine seiner bekanntesten Rollen ist der Beobachter September in der Sci-Fi-Serie Fringe, die von 2008 bis 2013 lief. Michael war von Anfang bis Ende dabei. Wie war es für ihn, dass seine anfangs kleine Rolle mit der Zeit immer wichtiger wurde?
I loved doing Fringe from beginning to end, and it was such an unusual kind of experience. So I did the audition, and then almost immediately was called by the producers, and they said, we want him to be in every episode, at least in the first year or two, but only for like just brief seconds. And we want the audience to maybe not even be sure that they saw him for a while, until like little by little you'd realize, wait, I think that guy was in this scene when they were going through the train or whatever. And they wouldn't reveal anything about him until near the end of the first season. Their hope was that by that point, the audience would be so curious about who he was, and it would be, you know, everybody would be talking about it. And I thought, that sounds really fun, really cool idea. At that point, they didn't know that they were going to cover my eyebrows and, you know, have him have absolutely no hair. So I didn't know that I would be spending as much time in a makeup chair as I was actually on set. So that's how it began. And then apparently the network, Fox, they said, we want to reveal the character sooner. So they brought that reveal forward to the fourth episode. But then, you know, then I went back into the background for a while, and then I'd sort of peek out and go back and forth. And I was really enjoying that. I also really loved playing a character who didn't speak in those early things and didn't speak much when he, you know, did show up. It goes back to what I was saying about having like some kind of a framework or some kind of structure, and then trying to see how much you can invest in that and how much of a character you can build with minimal elements. So we went through and looked at a bunch of different, you know, kind of 60s, 50s, 60s-ish kind of style suits. And I picked one that, you know, that I liked, and it turned out that they, you know, liked it as well. Which is good, because I wore that suit for 5 seasons then after that.
Beobachter sind mysteriöse, nichtmenschliche Charaktere, die das Geschehen in Fringe aus dem Hintergrund mitverfolgen. Wo hat die Inspiration für seine Rolle hergenommen?
His odd way of sort of listening to people and turning his head when he was listening and processing things. really came from observing my dog, who does that when I'm talking to her and explaining, no, we can't have any more treats right now. So little things like that that I would do started to just become who September was.
In der zweiten Staffel gibt es eine Musical-Folge, in der alle Charaktere eine Gesangseinlage haben. Nur Michael, der selbst am Broadway war, singt nicht. Wie kam es dazu?
It's funny, we did actually record a song. There was a song that September did. It was Oh Bad Moon Rising. When they looked at it back, they decided that even though it was a odd out of character episode altogether for all the characters, they felt like they needed to protect the character of September, and they just sort of thought, no, we want September to be more mysterious than singing in this musical episode. So yeah, everybody in the cast was like, how is it that the one Broadway musical guy is the one person who doesn't sing in this musical episode? But I think that was kind of partly the point.
Aber nicht nur in der Serie ist Michael ständig zu sehen gewesen. Er wurde auch in einer ungewöhnlichen Marketingkampagne eingesetzt.
This was a promotional thing. They would send me to these different real-life events, and I would appear in the background of the event with no mention of who I was or what I was doing there. It would just be like, why is this odd person sitting in the audience and making no responses at all? It was a crazy promotional idea because you had to already be watching the show for this character to mean anything. So in terms of like getting new viewers, I don't know what that was going to do, unless people were going to be like, who is that guy? And Google, find out he's from a show. But it was great fun. They also sent me to the baseball all-star game in St. Louis, to a Texas Motor Speedway for a NASCAR race. All kinds of real, the sidelines of an NFL playoff game.
Aber es gab auch peinliche Momente in der Kampagne, zum Beispiel, als er sich mit dem ahnungslosen Publikum auseinandersetzen musste.
I remember in American Idol, I was sitting next to the family of one of the performers, but my whole thing was like to just sit stone-faced and watch. And I had to be careful because any time the camera was on, it might be on me, so I couldn't break character unless we were at a commercial break or something. But every commercial break, I would have to lean over to the family and go, I think your son is a terrific performer. I just can't applaud or can't cheer or anything. So it's not that I think they're terrible. I'm just doing a job.
Als Performer war es ihm in dieser Situation also doppelt unangenehm. Wie hat der Rest des Casts auf die Promo-Idee reagiert?
Josh Jackson used to always tease me when I would go. I think by this point we were filming out in Vancouver. You know, they were there 5 days a week and working these 15, 16-hour days sometimes. It was really grueling. And I would do those when I came out, but I, was just there every few weeks. And they were just like in the grind of it. And Josh would always be like, how come you're going off to the All-Star game and you're going off to the Giants playoff game? And I'm here like working my ass off all day, every day, and you're getting to do all this fun stuff. And I was like, well, got to get a better agent.
Das war Teil 1 von 2 unseres Interviews mit Michael Cerveris. Seid gespannt auf den zweiten Teil, wo er über Kinotrends, den Schauspielstreik, seine Rolle im Marvel-Film Ant-Man and the Wasp und vieles mehr redet.